Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia on the 20th of November 2012. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another show. It's great to have your company today. My name's Hereward Fenton. Truth News Radio Australia comes from Australia, and we bring you news and insights in relation to stories that are of worldwide significance. And of course, we broadcast on the Logos Radio Network, and we're also available by podcast from our website at truthnews.com.au. Well, today I'm going to take a look at the current conflict in Israel, and I'm going to look at some of the, lesser known facts about the actual fatalities and the types of technologies that are being used to bring that about by the Hamas groups in Gaza, who are firing these short-range rockets, sometimes known as missiles, into Israel. And in the second half of the first hour, I will have an interview from a lady from Syria who is going to talk to us about the current situation in Syria and what is going on with the ongoing conflict there. So the first hour of today's show will be a pretty rich journey into the conflicts in the Middle East, and I hope I can provide some interesting alternative insights into what is actually going on there. Now, the first thing I'd actually like to talk about in relation to Israel is the nature of these rocket attacks. And I have an article here from antiwar.com, Dissecting IDF Propaganda, the numbers behind the rocket attacks. Actually, that's not from antiwar.com. That's actually from informationclearinghouse.info. I have another article from antiwar.com titled Gaza's Long-Range Rockets, Just Regular Rockets Without Explosives, and we'll be looking at that in a moment. Now, just getting into this article titled Dissecting IDF Propaganda by Fan Nguyen, which was published on the 17th of November. The substance of this article is looking at the actual number of fatalities that are established from the Gaza rocket attacks, and then comparing that to the figures that are supplied by the Israeli Defense Forces. And he has provided a list here of all the fatalities of rocket and mortar attacks fired from the Gaza Strip into Israel in the entire history of the attacks. Throughout the years of rocket attacks into Israel, a total of 26 people have been killed altogether. And this is a period that spans from June 2004 to the present, most recent fatalities, which occurred just a few days ago in November of 2012. So in that more than 8-year period, there have been a total of 26 fatalities in Israel. For the entire duration of the 2008 Hamas-Israel ceasefire, even after Israel had broken the ceasefire on November 4, not a single person was killed by rocket or mortar fire into Israel. Yet approximately 2 hours after Israel's commencement of Operation Cast Lead, one person in Israel was struck and killed. 2 days later, more than three people were killed in Israel from Gaza rocket and mortar attacks. And the point that is being made here is that when Israel engages in these extreme reprisals against the people in Gaza, the number of fatalities in Israel always increases. And this, of course, is in direct contrast to the claims made by the Israeli Defense Forces that they are actually reducing the threat to Israel. In fact, it's quite the opposite. But of course, the hidden fact in all of this is that the threat to Israel is really quite minor to start off with. So there is several levels of deception going on here. Now, apparently the IDF has actually exaggerated the number of fatalities in its own reporting. He says here, now that we have established that a total of 26 people have been killed by high-trajectory weapons from Gaza into Israel, let's look at some of the numbers that the Israel military has been peddling. In keeping with its social media focus, IDF has been distributing infographics through Facebook, Twitter, and an official blog. One recent infographic makes the following claims about the number of Israeli casualties from rocket attacks. And we have here a graphic that shows in 2006, 9 were killed and 371 injured. In 2007, 10 killed, 578 injured. In 2008, 15 killed, 611 injured. And I won't bother reading to you all those statistics, but we'll have links to that on our website. Now, a comparison between the IDF's fatalities and the established sources for those claims, we have here in the article. In 2006, the IDF claimed 9, the established number is 4. In 2007, the IDF claimed 10, the established number is 2. In 2008, IDF claimed 15, the established number is 8, and so on. So we have a pattern of exaggerations, which, of course, it's just standard war propaganda, isn't it? You just basically have to exaggerate the figures, you have to build your psychological impact by conveying to the public information in such a way that they become motivated, disturbed, and will be more likely to follow the lead of the government in its agenda. Now, the article has quite a lot more detail, and I'll leave it to you to examine that in depth. I'd like to turn now to some more serious questions about the actual capabilities of these Gaza rockets. Now, the type of rockets that are being fired by the Hamas groups into Israel are allegedly different to the ones that were being used a couple of years ago. These are known as the FAR, that's spelled F-A-J-R, FAR 5 missiles. And it is claimed that this is an Iranian-developed rocket, although Iran has vociferously denied that they actually supplied these rockets. And I have here an article from The Guardian that says that the FAR-5 missile can reach Israel's civilian heartland points. And I'll just read to you here from the article. In a straight fight between Israel and the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, there is no question who has the upper hand. Israel's armed forces are among the world's most sophisticated. Their ability to mount a drone strike of the kind that killed the Hamas military leader Ahmad Jabari on Wednesday attests to a deadly combination of precise weaponry and accurate intelligence. Well, that, my friends, is a massive exaggeration. There is absolutely nothing precise about these weapons, and that's well established that these are completely unguided. So that was a little bit of propaganda that was slipped into this article. However, let me continue. In the latest round of the conflict, the Palestinians have used a weapon which gives them a rare, if short-lived, advantage. a rocket which can strike at Israel's civilian heartland. This is the Far 5 missile developed by Iran and supplied by Hezbollah. It has a range of 75 kilometers, which means it can hit Tel Aviv and elsewhere in the heavily populated areas of central Israel. Ehud Barak, the Israel defense minister, announced that Israel had destroyed most of these missiles in air attacks. But Islamic Jihad, another militant Palestinian faction, said that it had launched a Far 5 at Tel Aviv, triggering the city's first air raid alert since it was hit by Iraqi Scuds since the 1991 Gulf War. Okay, now let's find out more about these missiles. The missiles were indeed developed by the Iranians, but the question of how the missiles got into Gaza is one that we cannot answer at present. But what's more important is understanding the actual capabilities of these missiles. And I'll read to you an article here from antiwar.com. Gaza's long-range rockets are just regular rockets without explosives. Take off the warhead and the empty barrel flies further. Much has been made of the threat posed by the seemingly longer-range rockets fired out of the Gaza Strip. Since the Israeli invasion, the regular, barely explosive rockets that hit southern towns have been replaced by the menace of rockets hitting noteworthy places like Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. Is this the smoking gun proving some nations are helping Gaza factions with rocket technology? Not at all, it turns out, as the rockets flying so much further are the exact same metal tubes that tend to come out of the strip whenever Israel attacks, and the reason they are going further is that they took all the explosives and the warhead casings off. They're pipes, basically, one Israeli official noted. And while the flying chunks of cylindrical metal could conceivably clonk someone on the head, the menace posed by such devices is even more theoretical than the already marginal risk posed by Gaza's usual retaliatory strikes. And I have an article here which is from an Israeli news source, which I also posted on Twitter a couple of days ago. Rockets stripped of explosives to fly further. And I'll get back to that after the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we'll be continuing with our discussion of the Israeli-Gaza rocket attacks. And do stay with us for our interview coming in the second half hour of today's show. We'll be right back after this break. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be talking to you today. Check out our website if you can. Check out truthnews.com.au. Got a lot of good information on there. Check out our Facebook page. And send me a message if you have any insights, ideas in relation to what I've said, or if you have any stories that you'd like to break, or indeed if you'd like to come on the show. Now, I'm just going to continue reading here in relation to the Gaza rocket attacks. And I have an article here from Ynet News, an Israeli news source, titled "Rockets Have Been Stripped of Explosives to Fly Further." Israeli security sources say some Palestinian rockets fired far into Israel during the Gaza flare-up lack powerful warheads to increase range. Now, this is quite interesting because we've heard quite a lot in the news about these attacks into Tel Aviv. But interestingly, I've not heard of any attacks in Tel Aviv that have caused any fatalities or even any injuries. And I've certainly, what I have seen indicates that the rockets landing in Tel Aviv do not have explosives. And I actually have a video clip from ABC News Australia, which demonstrates that. And I will try to get that up here in a moment. Now, let me just continue to discuss here the question about the rockets being stripped of their explosives. Some of the Palestinian rockets fired far into Israel have lacked powerful warheads because they were stripped down to increase range and spread alarm over a wider population. And this is from an Israeli security source. Our assessment is that the prestige of setting off alarms deep in Israel and being perceived as fighting on is as important to them now as spilling our blood. The official and two other sources who spoke to Reuters on the matter did not specify how many of the almost 900 rockets and mortars fired since fighting erupted on Wednesday had been deliberately sapped. The official said not a few of the rockets reaching Tel Aviv and cities close to Gaza were designed for much shorter ranges, but had been shorn of their weighty warheads so that they flew further. Well, I'd like to actually play to you now this clip from the ABC, which is actually a first-hand kind of news coverage of a rocket attack on Ashkelon, and I'm not quite sure what the distance there from Ashkelon to Gaza is, but it is quite clear that this rocket attack had no explosives at all. I'll just play to you a little bit of the clip here from the ABC.
Well, this is where the rocket came through the top floor there. They've already covered it with metal, straight through this metal door here and through the floor into the next flat down below. Now, it is a miracle that no one was killed or injured here, but come through, you can see the mess in this house. You can see, in fact, here's a fragment of metal that I believe was part of the door, not a part of the missile itself. The man here, around the corner here, was actually in his bed in this room. This man here was in his bed at the time, but because he was locked away in that room there, then he was okay, luckily. And his wife, who's just here, she's only just come back, and she's just realised that her apartment has been shattered like this.
Now, I'll just leave that there. Now, you may have noticed they used the word mess to describe the effect of this missile, and mess is really the correct word. It's ironic, really, because the ABC had this article up with the video purportedly showing, you know, the terrible devastation caused by the Gaza rocket attacks, and yet you look at the actual footage here, and there is a very small hole made in the roof and another small hole made in a wall, and clearly no explosives at all on this missile. And again, this is not an attack on Tel Aviv, but I would love to know, and I would I would call on our listeners, if you can actually do any research on this, to find out exactly what the proportion of rockets with warheads to those without is of those landing in Israel. I know a few of them have had warheads, and I've seen a couple of shots that look like that there was a proper explosion that occurred, but a large number of them do not have warheads at all. Now, this is all very important. And the question of the nature of these attacks and the threat posed by these attacks is not something that should be ignored, because it is actually being used as the prime justification, even to the extent that President Obama himself has said, this was when he was in Myanmar with Aung San Suu Kyi, he said that Israel cannot be expected to stand by and do nothing while missiles rained down on Israel. So really, the missiles are the central factor in this conflict. And if the missiles are a serious threat and if they are causing devastation, so be it. But if the missiles are not causing devastation, if they are not a significant threat, then that fact needs to be highlighted. And that's what I'm trying to do here. I'd like to talk a little bit about the way in which the exaggerated threat of these missiles is used to justify an absolutely lethal and a quite extreme use of power and force against against the Gazan people. It's really quite obvious when you look at the way this is being used, the way the provocation is used to create a reprisal which is 10 times greater than the force exerted. And you sort of have to ask the question whether this might be orchestrated. And I know I don't have any evidence to prove that. I don't have any evidence to prove that the entire Hamas-Israel conflict is somewhat engineered. But I'll just take it from one angle. And I want to compare it to other conflicts in the past where we've had powerful invasions of colonizing powers into other countries. Say, compare it to the Afghan situation or Northern Ireland or even, say, Vietnam and Cambodia. What we tend to get when we have this massive use of force and this brutality enacted by invading, conquering forces is that it tends to cultivate an extremist, fanatical element within the society that has been conquered. And those extremists tend to engage in a variety of unpleasant, extreme activities that, of course, we all abhor, because we all abhor violence. But that is a product of the violence that was enacted to start off with. The question of whether it may actually be engineered, whether Israel may have a secret relationship with Hamas, has to be looked at. We know that the British had a secret relationship with the IRA. We are going to break. When we come back from break, I will be with my interview subject, Hanadi Asud, who will be talking about Syria. Please stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia.
You reach all your selfish goals. punchline, left a punchline, leaving us all.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And it's my great pleasure to bring on the show now Hanadi Asud, who is a member of the Hands Off Syria group in Sydney, Australia. And she is from Syria, has lived in Syria for many years and currently lives in Australia. Hanadi, welcome to Truth News Radio.
Thank you.
Now, we've seen... Obviously, the news this week is very much focused on the conflict in Israel. And that, of course, is connected. The whole relationship between countries and conflicts in the Middle East is all very connected, and Israel is a very important part in all of this that is going on. But we will be probably seeing less of Syria in the news while this conflict rages in Gaza. And, of course, we've seen recently, just today in the news from the BBC, we see a report from Syria that the Western-backed group in Syria is now being rejected by the Islamist groups there. And we see, obviously, some sort of breakdown in the opposition group's solidarity in Israel, sorry, in Syria. And... the whole situation is very confused and certainly very confusing from the perspective of someone looking at it from Australia. And yes. It's great to have you on the show, Hanadi. And I did attend one of your protests a few months ago, and I understand that many people in Australia, many, many Syrians, probably the vast majority, think that the current government in Syria is doing a reasonably good job. They may not be 100% in support of it, but they're in comparison to the opposition groups, in comparison to the destabilization which is being wreaked by these groups, they're in strong support of the Syrian government and the Assad government particularly. If you could just tell us what your perspective is on all of that, that would be fantastic.
Sure. The way I see it, as an Australian, I would, if I see it as an Australian, a group of rebels coming in and starting to bomb, they did not start as being peaceful protesters. They did not. When people started, it's not them that were protesting. There were peaceful people walking and demonstrating, asking for reforms, which we all want that. I mean, all the Syrians want reforms because there is corruption there that everybody's aware of. And I know that every country has corruption, but the way to deal with it is not by killing and beheading and, bombing and affiliating with Al-Qaeda. This is what Syria is facing. Syria is not facing people that just want reforms. If I know in Australia, if anybody comes in and shoots or bombs a bus, the Australian government will not be nice to them. And Australia will not accept Qatar and Saudi Arabia to arm and fund rebels to spread their democracy. It's just the way I see it is. It's not the way it's been portrayed in the mainstream media, unfortunately. You see, there's been a lot of reports, there's been a lot of journalists who've been there, they've seen how much support the citizen in Syria have for the government. They know that the people there want reform, but they don't want it the rebels' way, with the Western intervention, that's not what any country would like. And we've seen that in what happened in Libya. There was a carpet bombing. There was a lot of, there was a lot of atrocities. And this is not how you do reforms in the country. I'm pretty sure Australians would agree with me that they would not like that happening to Australia. I mean, Syria has just normal people that want a normal life just like here. We've lived always in harmony. I've lived there for 8 years. We've all lived together. Syria is a secular country. Everybody, accepted one another. It's a there's a beautiful diversity there. Just to me, when I came back to Australia, I didn't find anything different. You know, we've lived there in harmony. We came here. We just found the same thing. It wasn't any different. So they want to change that. That's why the Gulf states, these leaders in the Gulf, are intervening, because they want Syria to become a Islamic state, not a... They don't like secular in the Middle East. Right. They want it to be an extreme state.
And of course, the current...
We see that, yes.
Syria currently is a secular state. Is that correct?
Syria is a secular state. It's not an Islamic.
So that's a very important point.
Yes.
It's a very important point that really people and listeners need to be aware of, that Syria is one of the more open, enlightened, tolerant countries in the entire Middle East. Yeah.
And the only opposition in Syria are these Islamists, these Brotherhood extremists, and they are the people that are causing all these atrocities. They are the people that are beheading. We've seen a lot of, we go by YouTube that are posted by normal Syrians, and by them themselves, they are beheading people so they can get people to, follow them, because they are warning them, if you're not with us, this is the consequences. And the images that are on YouTube are just petrifying. And
absolutely.
This is what the Syrians are facing, because I've been asked so many times, why are there people accommodating for them? And I said, if you have been given the option to either be beheaded or have me in your house, I will welcome you in my house, that's for sure. Knowing who you're dealing with, some people have to surrender. This is a human nature.
Yeah, it's just really, really shocking when you look into the facts. But of course, the thing I find that's the most difficult with this is that the media has engaged in such a sustained propaganda campaign against the Syrian government. And when we're talking the entire media here, we're talking every single arm of the media around the world, apart from small alternative media sources like this one. Most people cannot believe that they would have been lied to such an extent by the mainstream news. And this, Hanadi, is why I do Truth News, is to simply provide an alternative voice, because there are so few of them that this has to be done, because we basically have to take the media back, as it appears to have been completely bought out and controlled by militaristic geopolitical forces that simply use media to spread propaganda.
That is so true. That is so true. I mean, I watch what's happening in the Middle East, not just in Syria. I don't know how much you know about what's happening in Saudi Arabia, in Bahrain. People there cannot even open their mouth. All their activists, all their human rights are being locked up. Why? I mean, since there's a lot of people that care about humanity, why don't they care about these people? Aren't they human beings as well? I mean, look what's happening in other countries, not just here. Why is everything, all the lights are shed on Syria? Personally, I think they have interests, which is economical interests. They have pipeline gas interests. That's all they want out of Syria. They don't really want democracy. They don't really care whether the Assad is killing or not, whether he's killing or not. That's their least concern. I mean, look what's happening in Gaza. You did mention what's happening in Gaza. What has the UN done for them? They're still discussing it. They're still negotiating. And I heard today there's been already 100 people civilized, this normal civilian dead. And over 800 injured. For what?
Yeah.
They're still negotiating business and money. I mean, do they really care about humanity? I don't believe it.
It certainly doesn't. It certainly does not appear that way, does it? What is your perspective on the overall or the longer term aims in this kind of conquest of Syria? The fact that they appear to want to conquer Syria. Israel seems to be a very important player in this. Israel would like to neutralize Syria. And is this a stepping stone to an attack on Iran?
Well, the thing is, they do not want a country in the Middle East that will resist America and Israel. And they know that Syria, Iran, South Lebanon, they're allies and they are against the state of Israel. Therefore, for them, they have to go. They have to go. They're not puppets like the Gulf region. They're not puppets like the other countries. And, you know, that, to them, this is an obstacle. They have to get rid of it. That's the only way they see it. They're not looking at anything else. Plus, the, as I said, economic interest. The, you know, the oil, the gas. This is my perspective of what's going on over there.
And what's your feeling about the current situation? I mentioned there earlier that there's a news story here straight out of the BBC saying that the Islamists are now opposing the group that has been backed by the West. Can you shed any light on that?
I actually heard that now there's a new leader, and apparently he's a sheikh, he's an Islamist himself. And he is actually, what I read one of his statements, that when he talks about people other than Muslims, he calls them the disbelievers. He actually mentioned the word kafir, which means in English, you're a disbeliever. And these people, the way they look at as an unbeliever...
We're just going to break, Hanadi.
Okay.
I'll get you to continue with that after the ad break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be with you today. I'm talking to Hanadi Asood from the Hands Off Syria Group based in Sydney, Australia. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio. My name's Herawood Fenton. Great to be with you today. Today my guest is Hanadi Asood from Hands Off Syria, activist group in Sydney, Australia, working to bring information, facts and awareness to people in Australia about the real situation in Syria. Of course, there have been a number of protests that have been held in Sydney, some of them quite huge. I attended one. And from what I can tell, the vast bulk of the Syrian people, at least in Australia, are completely against the Western intervention, completely against the media perspective, the media bias on what is going on in Syria. Now, Hanadi, I wonder if you could just continue there from where you left off before the break. You were talking about the... some of the groups in Syria and what they're currently doing.
Yes, I mean, I don't know how much you know about what have happened. I mean, I was actually, the area I was brought in was, there was a lot of Christians there. I heard that all these Christians have been forced out of Homs, where I come from, and actually in this province, there was a lot of Christians. They were all forced out, and they've got this slogan where they want all the Alawites to their graves and all the Christians to Beirut. So that's exactly what they're doing. They've forced all the Christians out, and the Alawites, they're beheading them and they're killing them only because the leader is from the same sex. So they're trying to create this sectarian tension there, where Syrians have never even, you know, thought of... You know, we never even ask people what religion you are, or, you know somebody walked into a church, he's a Christian, but you'd never ask this question. It's really offending somebody when you ask them. They're trying to ask people, what are you? And then they start killing them. So they're trying to use this ideology that was actually used in the past in Lebanon. So that's one thing. That's what they're doing to the Christians. And the Christians that refuse to leave, they are being killed. They go into churches, they demolish them. There's a lot of image. If you go in and just search for any church in Homs, you'll find it destroyed. You'll find it hardly anybody there. And if there is a Christian there, he's dead. this is it. They have to, they're creating this place where it's only Sharia law, and I don't even know how they think, but they just want Muslims there, Muslims that think the way they do, and if you don't, they'll kill you. This is the Al-Qaeda, I think, Taliban mentality. God knows how these people think.
It really is your worst nightmare, isn't it? I mean, it's just, it's so far worse than what even the media is telling you that the Syrian government is doing. It's like a mirror opposite of what we've been told, and it's deeper and darker. Can I just ask you, what is your religious background, Hanadi?
I am a Muslim.
Right, so you're a Muslim, but again, and that's important because some people might say, oh, well, you're probably a Christian and you're, you know, against the Muslims. But no, you're not against the Muslims. You are a Muslim.
That's what I said you would. I am a Muslim, but I'm against what's happening. I mean, as I said, we've always lived in harmony. We've never, ever asked the person, what are you? But as I said, you will know somebody when you see them going into either a mosque or a church. But to know that this is what they're doing, I mean, even the group Hands of Syria invited Mother Agnes of the Cross, Mother Agnes, Mariam Agnes. She came to Sydney. She left here about a month ago. We invited her early in October. She came here. She was interviewed by SBS. She had two interviews by the Australian newspaper, and she spoke of what she saw. She was an eyewitness because we knew she saw so much, and she filmed them. We invited her to Australia, and she went around a few states, and she went in the Parliament House, and she met a few parliamentarians because we thought her voice is the strongest voice for us to talk. And she, the things she spoke about, I can't even imagine myself. She said she saw blood and she saw people being beheaded. She said it. She goes, I went into an area where there were only Alawites and I could just see a genocide there. She goes, you come to our area, there's no Christians there. And she is actually, her neck is wanted because she is talking of what's happening. She had to flee Homs and now she's living in Beirut. So this is an example. SBS interviewed her, but they didn't actually, they've edited a lot of her interviews, so you couldn't understand when she spoke of atrocities, you couldn't understand who was doing it. And I feel like typical SBS to make it so ambiguous. I mean, she stated very clearly, if you read the Australian newspaper, or Mother Agnes, she talks, everything is just there for people that really want to know what's happening in Syria.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as we've seen, there is a mandate within the mainstream news organizations to suppress information which makes the rebels in Syria look bad, and to exaggerate anything that makes the Syrian government look bad, and quite often to completely misrepresent massacres that have been conducted by the rebels and make it look as if the government has conducted them. I mean, can you expand on that theme at all?
The thing is, there's been a lot of, I've read, there was, I don't remember the journalist's name, he's from Germany, he went to the area where the Hula massacre was.
Yeah.
He said that that area is a pro-government. Why would a government kill its own people that support? That's number one. And apparently the people that went there to investigate these massacres, the people that massacred were all pro. Plus, not only that, majority were Alawites, which proves that slogan that they use, Alawites to the grave, that they are doing another Holocaust in Syria. I mean, now there's one in Gaza. So it's basically, if you support your government, this is what's happening in Gaza. Hamas, the civilians in Hamas are paying the price because they support that government called Hamas government, and they are paying the price. And actually, Sharon said that a long time ago, these people are not civilians. These people voted for Hamas, therefore they deserve what they're getting. And I think the Syrians are being treated the same way. This is their ideology. If you support a government, you have to pay the price. What sort of democracy is this? So if we vote for Gillard and not want Tony Abbott, are we going to be paying a consequence? Is this how Australians would accept it? And I really want Australians to open their mind and think, this is what Syrians are facing. Who will accept this?
Absolutely. Actually, can I just get an overview from you of what the Syrian, pro-Syrian groups in Australia are doing? And do you have any protests planned for the near future?
Not yet. We're actually trying, we're focusing right now on educating the public. We're trying to print out a lot of images of these rebels. We want the people to know who are these rebels. How do they look? They look like these Taliban. We want to show them their faces. We actually had a debate on SBS with some of these opposition, and when people saw that show, they were surprised. These are the people the Syrians are facing. People
right.
that look like Taliban.
Wow.
People just thought, oh, we thought Syria is all about the dictator killing his people. I said, absolutely not. And we were very lucky that SBS has accepted a debate between us and them just for the Australians to see who's the other side.
That's interesting. Now, has that gone to air already? Is that debate gone to air on ABC, on SBS?
Yeah, if you go on SBS Insights.
Okay.
It was last month aired, yes. You could see the Syrian debate.
Great. I'll definitely put that up on our show notes on Truth News.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would be really, really interested in that. What was the response to that? Was there a live audience?
The thing is, they've asked us to have 10 audience from our group, 10 from their group,
right.
and 10 that SBS invited.
Yeah.
But we were looking on the feedback on SBS itself. People were just, we felt that we won the debate. People were just shocked by what they saw and what they heard. People were sending me, emails to say, is this what's happening in Syria? And I feel like, oh my God, is people that ignorant? But then again, it's only the mainstream media to blame because they've got an agenda. And it's always based on finance and money and oil. This is all they care about. They don't really care about people. So they're allies with America. America's got an agenda. Australia follows. And this is what it is. So we have to work on educating the public. We have to work on, printing magazines and trying to speak to media more often because we really need people to listen. Listen to us for a change.
Yes, I think it's a question of counteracting the bombardment of propaganda with a bombardment of information. You sort of have to match it because the media is relentless. It's every day. There's always another story. And people become sort of numbed. And when things are repeated over and over again, as what I've found is that people just accept it must be true. They think, well, they wouldn't be telling me this over and over again if it wasn't true. And that's what we have to counteract, is that people are being misled by a deliberate campaign. And I would love to, do everything I can to support you in your quest to bring truth, because that's what we're trying to do, is bring truth. Now, can I ask, are there any websites that people can look at to get more information about your groups?
We have Hands Off Syria on Facebook and Hands Off Syria website. We post all international reports and journalists talking. So it's not like one side. We've got the global search articles. We've got a lot of credible reporters that have been to Syria. People that actually been to Syria, not a YouTube by an opposition sending it to one of the TV and without even verifying how truth it is, just posting it and let the whole world watch it. I mean, how could you post something you cannot even verify? So to us, we go by credible reporters that have been on ground, filmed with their own cameras, spoken to Syrians inside Syria.
Absolutely. Please continue. We've got about 30 seconds left, if you'd just like to finish up there.
Yes, this is our group, the Hands Off Syria, was formed to educate the public, to raise awareness, to let the world know that the mainstream media is not saying the truth, unfortunately, and our role is to raise awareness. So please look at our site, Facebook, Hands Off Syria, and we've got a website, Hands Off Syria, as well, and we've got all the facts that hopefully will be of help to anybody who's interested.
Thanks so much, Hanadi, and I do hope to talk to you again. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and yes, we will be following this story. Thanks so much for coming on this week.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your call too. Thank you.
Over and out from Truth News. We'll be back next week.